Welcome to this week's podcast of Kicking It with Kidneys with your host, Cindy Barclay. Hey, Cindy, take it away.
Well, hello out there, and welcome to Kicking It with Kidneys, a forum to discuss important topics for historically suppressed voices within communities of color. Now, throughout season two, our panelists and guests have explored different issues related to how healthcare is administered in the U.S. The consequences of unequal access to basic healthcare has resulted in astronomical cost. Mortality rates are double for people of color, and the financial costs to manage chronic conditions continue to plunge families into persistent poverty. While the mission of KIWK is to provide a forum for people who have been historically suppressed, our guest today challenges the perception that only people of color fit into that description. He asks, what about groups that have been exploited and oppressed, not because of their color, but simply because of their lack of social status, power, and money? Our KIWK team is back in the house. Okay, we have BJ Simone, we have Rita Williams, and Maria Jimenez. So BJ, what is the word on the street?
Hi, Cindy, and hi, everybody. It is so good to be back with the team again. But our word on the street today is something we've touched on before, and that is poverty and disparity. So let's listen to what people have to say.
People are often born into poverty, and it's been poverty that their mother, their grandmother, etc. has experienced.
For a family of four, it's defined as making less than $26,000 a year. More than 38 million Americans live in poverty. For Black Americans, it's one in every five, higher than Latinos, Asian Americans, and more than double the rate of white Americans. And it spills into all aspects of life. More chronic health issues, higher rates of divorce, and abuse or neglect. Climbing out can seem nearly impossible. It often requires a new job or a degree, much harder with fewer resources like transportation and childcare.
I'm not able to live off of minimum wage. I had times where I can literally get paid that morning, and by the afternoon, my whole check was gone. I would never want my kids to see the worries that I have. I'm not going to have gas for the next couple days. I'm going to have to make this gas that I do have there and stretch. I couldn't take my kids to McDonald's if they asked for it. I couldn't give them money to go to the book fair at school because I didn't have it. Because it was either going towards rent or a certain bill. I barely get by.
I have to expand things out so that I know that they all have food in their bellies and that they're well fed. If you don't have the necessities up in your cabinets, you will struggle, possibly starve without it. I know they say that people who live on food stamps have it made, but you don't. You really don't. Once you get your food stamps, by the time you feed your kids, it's not even enough for yourself. You have to still save cash and make sure you have money on the side to get more food. So, no, it's not enough.
I am 10 years old, and I live with my mother and my brother, Tyler, and he is 12 years old. I don't think we're a rich family, but like, I think we're kind of a poor family.
My name is Jasmine, and I am 9 years old, and I live with my brothers, Joshua, Jalen, and Johnny.
My name is Johnny Davis. I am 13 years old, finna be 14 in 3 months.
We are in the Salvation Army, homeless shelter. You don't want a lot of people to find out that you live here. People will make fun of it, and it can really hunt you after a while. You start to have no friends. People tease you about it and stuff like that.
The prejudice we have toward poor people, which, by the way, is entirely linked with the racial prejudice.
I don't hold my egg in place where they won't fall.
People have used race as a wedge to keep poor people apart, including down here.
Crux says many of the issues plaguing poor white people in rural areas mirror those of poor people of color in urban areas. Unemployment, issues with the criminal justice system, substance abuse.
When are we as American citizens going to get so fed up with it, of being told that we just don't deserve that equity?
To pay our bills, like our house bills and stuff, I'm afraid like we'll get homeless. Me and my brother will starve. You never know what'll happen in your life. So, yeah.
The question is, whose life matters? This is a difficult subject, but is one that cannot be ignored. Class and racial disparity are ongoing problems in the U.S., and no place is it more apparent than in the healthcare industry. With decades of experience as a practitioner, our guest, Dr. Charles Crum, has been in a key position to witness the socio-political changes that have occurred over time. He has joined us today to share his experience and thoughts on healthcare disparity, the consequences of medical bias, and suggestions on how to address current problems challenging the medical profession today. Thank you so much and welcome, Dr. Crum.
Howdy.
How are you?
Super. Maybe to give a little more insight, because I have a very good understanding. I've told Ms. Barkley I'm a Missouri hillbilly, and that's not a joke.
Okay.
In high school, I did not have indoor plumbing at an outhouse.
Wow.
That was the year they integrated the schools, 1954.
Wow.
But I never looked at myself as being poor. We just didn't have very much money. So we had to make do with what we had. And education and perseverance is the main thing, but that has to be taught. It is not something that just happens.
So true. Yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to start our questions with our panelists today. And I think the first one is BJ.
Okay. Hi, Dr. Crum. Again, yes. It's wonderful having you with us. From a medical perspective, do you think that the average patient understands or even acknowledges racial health disparity?
No, I don't think the average patient does. Let me quote a study that I just recently went over that patients of color treated by Black doctors in the hospital have equal care. However, the thing that they did notice was preventative care was much better if the doctor was Black.
Wow.
And so it wasn't a color issue, it was a cultural issue. Now, that's exactly what I would expect, because if you have an Indian doctor taking care of an Indian patient, the medicine aspect is going to be okay, but the lifestyle and the understanding of the patient is going to be better with your Indian doctor,
exactly.
American Indian. So, but the main thing is that how can we make that better? And later on, there's a movement to increase the number of students of color in medical school. And I talked to the equity officer at the University of Missouri last Friday, and I'll cover that later. Okay.
All right. Okay.
But so a patient who sees a doctor, a Black patient sees a doctor of color, one may have more trust, may feel more comfortable. The medical knowledge is going to be basically the same. So, but I don't think the patient actually perceives this. Now, in my practice, you know, actually, I'm a strong advocate of Martin Luther King. I never did look at color. When I would see a hospital patient, I would pick up the insurance information to go to the office, but I never looked at it so that everyone got 100%. So if you start looking at that, say, well, I'm not getting paid today. I'm not going to work as hard. No, but I don't know how you get everybody to do that. But by doing that, your patients get better care.
Right.
I interviewed 11 physicians for this.
Oh, nice.
Five were Black.
Uh-huh.
Four were Asian, and one was Chinese.
Okay.
And it's interesting that none of them felt that there was systemic racism in medicine. they felt their patients were getting good care. Now, I'm not saying that there's not, but I don't think it is overwhelming, and it can be addressed. The interesting thing is of the Black physicians, four of the five were foreign medical graduates, and they are the ones that felt there was less racial interference in medicine than the American doctor. See, they came here from another country. They came from poorer countries. But the main thing is there are systems, and we previously had talked to Ms. Barkley, that the systems are not perfect. But there is a system for people who don't have insurance, for regardless of what your race is. And there's an equity within the system. Therefore, we need to make the system work
the best
we can for everyone. And an example, I have a relative that didn't have health insurance, and she got ovarian cancer. She was treated at Bentall. She got excellent medical care.
Excellent care.
And she's now cancer-free.
Okay. Wow.
So that, but, you know, it's sometimes it's harder to get into the system, and that's, you know, one of the issues. But do you have other questions for you related to that?
Well, and I think too, Dr. Crum, is that the quality of care, a lot of people tend to think that the quality of care is different in the private sector, meaning that hospitals that are private versus, and the doctors that service those hospitals, that in the private sector, that they may be more astute, they may be, have more education. I don't know what it is. But well, some people tend to think that if you the county system versus the private system, you know, that the care is not equitable.
Well, see, not necessarily the care, but an example. I had a patient that needed a cholecystectomy. And there was a surgeon and an Indian surgeon.
Right.
And I was going to try him out because he was an excellent surgeon. So I referred the patient to him. The patient's on the gurney ready to go to the operating room. He said, this patient only has Medicaid. And I says, and you're going to do the best gallbladder surgery you've ever done in your life. See, but see, I'm not sure how you get around that. But there are some doctors that just take cash.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure exactly how you can avoid all of that. But there are systems, yes.
Okay. Rita?
Welcome, Dr. Crum, to our show. So as a medical doctor, have there been circumstances that you witnessed when a patient's race benefited them?
Not particularly. Okay. However, let me divulge a little bit. I recently did my CME credit. I did 25 hours of Zoom in 5 days. That is not fun. But one of the things that was taken up for kidney disease, how we determine your function is called glomerular filtration rate.
Right, okay. Exactly.
And there is what is called an eGFR. And the studies were done in 1970.
Yeah.
So that a Black male of a 70-kilogram male had more muscle mass than a white male of 70 kilograms. So they had a different number for whites and Blacks.
Okay.
And at the time, it was appropriate. However, with the mixture of races now, it's not a just pure white or Black. And it was brought to the attention appropriately. And I would commend the National Kidney Foundation because they formed a committee. They addressed the issue. And just this last week, they came out with their results. Now, it's going to take a period of months, but what they're going to do is have the laboratories list just eGFR, period.
Okay.
Okay. Now, one of the issues, I think some of the younger doctors are kind of lazy.
You think?
Well, because my patients, I would do what is called a 24-hour urine collection, and I would calculate my own glomerular filtration. For that particular patient, I don't rely on just the eGFR. But a lot of people don't want to go to that trouble, so they rely on that. So by taking out the white and Black from that, that is beneficial. There is an additional test, which is called cystatin C. So by combining those two, it's going to take a couple of years. Mm-hmm. We'll be able to identify. Now, the GFR is muscle mass related.
Okay.
So a little lady that weighs 90 pounds mm-hmm. with a creatinine of 2 is a lot worse than a 280-pound man that has a creatinine of 2. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, but I think that part is going to be addressed, and I think there's going to be some benefit from that.
Yeah.
The other thing is, along the same lines, it was kind of a movement that the blacks were not getting transplanted equitably. Okay.
Yeah, but you know, Dr. Crump, let me just say this. You know, black folks don't want to give away nothing. We don't give away our body parts. Well, okay, I want to hear y'all.
Not the Latinos either.
Okay, but black we think we came here, we want to die with it, but yet we want to complain. But go ahead. Okay.
Okay. So it's not a black thing. My black patients, after explaining the advantages and disadvantages of transplant, mm-hmm. frequently would choose not to get the transplant. Now, that could be one, just the culture thing. Mm-hmm. Two, it could be distrust with the system. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But as an example of my longest, I have a patient that I put on Bentop in 1975, mm-hmm. black patient. Mm-hmm. Never missed his dialysis, refused to transplant. He died in 2015, raised a family, 40 years.
Wow.
Yeah. The system does work.
Yes, yes.
Asian patient, put on transplant in 77, cadaver kidney. He went back on dialysis in 2019. Cadaver kidneys work 5 to 10 years. I told him, if he goes to Vegas, I'm going to go with you. You won the medical lottery. Yeah. So, but it's more than just a color thing. And there have been efforts to change that mm-hmm. for mm-hmm. education so that, and not only the transplant issue is on the black population, they're less likely to donate a kidney.
That's true. That's true. That's true.
But by improving those two things, the population is a benefit. Mm-hmm. But across the board, in the hospital per se, even the private hospital and the Bentham Hospital, mm-hmm. basically, the patients get the same care.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I can't say that is 100% the same, but in the studies that have been done, generally, that's the case.
Yeah. And with transplantation, you know, it just has a lot to do with the availability of donors, right?
Correct.
And basically, you know, these families that have large populations of individuals within that, they need to basically talk to aunts and uncles and brothers and sisters, about actually, you know, having them participate and, you know, donating a transplant.
Yeah, a living related donor gives you a much better chance.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But the, you know, the cadaver route works quite well as well.
But if they're Medicare, Medicaid, Dr. Crum, Medicaid type patients, isn't it different? Aren't they treated differently as opposed to private pay? Why is it? I mean, this is what I've noticed. I could be wrong. It seems to me that patients with private insurance get transplant quicker than those that have just plain Medicare. Am I wrong or is it just, you know?
I can't say that that does not happen. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, I can mm-hmm. say in my experience, like Memorial Hermann at the medical center.
Yes.
Our group probably provided 15% of their transplants.
Wow. Okay.
And I managed to get all of my patients, regardless of their coverage, that wanted a transplant, I got them transplanted. Actually, I might even get in the Guinness Book of Records because I had 2 patients that I sent to Mexico and got them dialyzed in Mexico.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Wow.
But they had peritoneal dialysis. But, yeah. But you have to be persistent to get things done.
Okay. Maria?
Hey, Dr. Crum. Thanks for joining us today.
Sure.
My question for you is, what do you see as the primary similarities between racially segregated communities?
Okay. I've been around for a long time, which is good. Okay. And in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, big movement for desegregation. And there were actually good strides done. I feel today, unfortunately, with some of the activists, that is being reversed. There are some colleges now, they have separate dorms, they have separate graduations. There are some that want a separate national anthem. I'm an advocate of Martin Luther King. We're all Americans. And so I think we should not be judged by our skin, just the character. Now, Morgan Freeman, he's one of my favorite actors. And like Black History Month, he says he doesn't believe in Black History Month. He says it's American History Month because we're all Americans. Okay. There is segregation, but I don't think we should have segregation. But that's a personal opinion. Now, in medicine, at this point, I don't think there's any actual segregation as far as on the medical aspect. And hopefully we won't have that.
Okay. This is a very difficult topic that we're discussing today. And I'm so glad that you came on with us to have this dialogue. We really appreciate this. Okay. All right, BJ.
Well, Dr. Crum, I also have a question. It kind of circles back to the first one. As you did the research and you definitely interviewed some of your colleagues, but we talked on the previous program about unconscious bias. And so, again, if you ask people if there is any racial bias, sometimes they don't see it. They're just not aware of it, particularly in medicine, because we all come in with our own preconceived ideas and about people of different groups, particularly if they're different from our orientation. So,
well, that is true, and it is actually unfortunate. One of the things that got my ire recently is there was a doctor in Florida. He says, I don't want to take care of these unvaccinated people that get COVID. Well, in the 90s, I was one of the few doctors that would see the AIDS patients. You know, should I not see the AIDS patient because they got AIDS? No, you're a doctor to take care of everyone.
That's right.
So that there is bias, and it's kind of hard to now, hopefully, in the medical schools, they will start teaching more to help better introspection of the individual. And there's still going to be, another example is foreign medical graduates of my colleagues that came here 20, 25 years ago. They were outstanding physicians. Today, many are business people.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Medicine is business. It's just medicine. So that's a societal problem. Yeah.
Well, then I do have another question.
Sure.
What do you see as some problems that disadvantaged white patients might be concerned about the most?
Well, primarily, I think it's just economics and it's their coverage where they can get the medical care. Economic inequality. Okay. Economic inequality is a significant issue. Now, one might think that it's just you got the rich people, you got the poor people are disadvantaged, and somebody should take care of them. Okay. But it's not that simple. There are some that choose to be unequal. And that's not being derogatory.
That's true. Yeah.
An example, I have a relative who is a waitress. She works 4 days a week, and she can hardly make it. You go to another job, you work 5 days a week. You make more money, and things are better. But economic inequality, but part of that's her choice.
Yeah, that's self-accountability. That's self-accountability.
Now, as far as about the minimum wage, I have lived the American dream. Okay? In college, I worked at a state hospital a night shift, and I made equivalent today of $11.50 an hour. And on that, I supported a wife, 2 children, and went to college. But we ate out once a month. McDonald's, 5 hamburgers for a dollar. We went to 1 movie a month. But we had a goal. We were going someplace, and I lived under the poverty level until I was 30 years old. But the thing is, we lived well. There were 3 senators that tried to live on the food stamp level for a month, and they couldn't do it. I went to HEB. but you have to cook. If you cook your meals, you spend the time. With that money, you can provide for the family. But you can't have pizza every night. So again, it's an educational process to where people can do better, but they have to know that they can.
Well, that $11 an hour supporting a family kind of threw out the thought of that white privilege. So I guess you didn't have white privilege, Dr. Crum.
Well, that's a mission to use. All the black kids in my high school had indoor plumbing. I was the only one that didn't. And guess what? We were all friends.
Yeah, that's right.
So I have a question, another question, sure. Dr. Crum. What do you think are solutions or changes that might reconcile groups at the bottom that are competing for the same benefits? And you kind of started talking about that, equality for healthcare, education, fair housing, and decent wages.
Absolutely. Okay. And also getting ready for this, I was looking at where can we make a change?
Right.
And I looked up the three principles of the year for the United States. Three that were black. Okay. Dr. Eric Johnson, Kansas City, Missouri. Shanta Reynolds, Middleton, Delaware. And Richard M. Gordon, the fourth. Family proud.
Okay.
In Philadelphia. The interesting thing was there was nothing about race in all three of them. He expected the best out of every one of his students.
Mm-hmm.
And over a three-year period, all three brought the school scores up. The students of color, the graduation rate exceeded the state level, but there's a disadvantage there. All three of them within 4 years were moved up within the administrative system. See? So what we need is we need principals of that caliber to stay in the trenches so that school systems that are not working, they need better administration. It's not the students that are the problem.
Well, I know for a fact a lot of the strides were made in the 50s and 60s, you know. Black folks were just really accomplished, and now I'm beginning to wonder where this all is going, you know.
Well, again, I think one of the greatest issues was in 1938 in the black community, there was 11% illegitimate children. Today, 72. See, so you need a family. Denzel Washington, one of my favorite actors again, he had two friends. He said, what saved him? Even though his parents were divorced, he said, I had a father. The other two guys, one is serving life.
I think that's when they're talking about systemic racism, because when you look at the history of slavery, okay, yeah, the family unit was never meant to be within the African-American communities. I'm trying to say because...
Well, but back in the early 1900s, the family unit was there. And unfortunately, our society has gotten away where it's passé to have a family unit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I have a comment on that. And I think certainly, piggybacking on what Cindy said, for the African-American family, the family was always, there was always a sense of threat there. And that's the primary difference. Granted, we did have intact families, as you said, you know, in previous years. But when that family lives under the constant threat, particularly of the male head of household being removed, that does create trauma within the family unit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Ben Carson, the neurosurgeon, his mother couldn't read or write, but she made sure that her boys went to school, they studied, and they achieved. So that's where it has to be. I mean, and you can't, you know, money doesn't fix that, you know, and I'm not sure how that can be changed that much, but that's where the key is.
Yeah, education. And we've all got to work together, but we need systems in place that will ensure that these kids in the poverty-stricken areas have access to good education,
Katrina,
and I think a lot of these schools need to, you know.
And good role models, Cindy, as well.
Right.
Like good role models as well is important.
Yeah.
One of the greatest things that came out of Katrina,
mm-hmm.
was all the kids from the ghetto got out of the ghetto.
Yeah.
And many of them didn't have to go back.
Yeah. Yeah.
There were some, but that was because they were entrenched and their breaking the system was almost impossible, but they were physically removed. Mm-hmm. Houston and other places.
They had to be removed. The things were so bad. They had to be removed. So that provided opportunity.
And consequently, they did better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dr. Krum, my question to you, in your opinion, what should minority groups be doing to reduce the disproportionate rates of illness and deaths experienced by groups throughout the country?
Again, education is the main thing. As far as dialysis goes, there's been discrimination in dialysis from the beginning of time. When I was doing my fellowship, there were 10,000 people on dialysis in the United States. There's now 600,000. Okay. If you were a diabetic before 1970, you didn't get a bus ticket. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You died. Then they started transplanting the diabetics and found that they didn't do that bad. Now, 50% or plus diabetics are on dialysis. Okay. But I think as groups, again, primarily education is it. Another example, there's a gentleman I go to church with who's disabled, and I went to his doctor's appointment with him. Doctor was a Chinese doctor, excellent cardiologist. And he said, Mr. So-and-so, this is our plan, and your main issue is you need to lose weight. And when I see you in 3 months, if you haven't lost weight, you probably shouldn't come back. But we have a plan. We have people to help you. He didn't mean it, but I think he got his attention.
Yeah.
So that the patients have to be able to do what the doctor recommends to help them.
So accountability.
In the Black population, there's more obesity, more diabetes. Again, education and as far as they're getting to be more and more clinics, Harris County clinics, where the people are getting able to touch with the medical system at an earlier stage of their medical disease.
And you know what, Dr. Crum, these are hard facts that we as African-Americans don't want to hear. You said that about obesity. Somebody could take that wrong. But the fact is the fact. These are statistics. And so that's why I believe that we as a race, minorities, period, we have to do some self-searching, okay, and basically look for tools to help ourselves, you know.
Well, now, as far as the equity goes, the University of Missouri, where I graduated from, about 6 years ago, they were almost to lose their accreditation because they didn't have enough Black students. It wasn't that they didn't have enough Black students. They didn't have students applying to medical school.
Back to education.
Right. So last Friday, I talked to Dr. Henderson Kelly, a Black physician. She is outstanding. And what they have now is, she called it the pipeline program. They have contacted the high schools. So they're trying to get the students interested in medicine in the high schools so that when they get to college, they can take the credits necessary to apply. Starting in college, you're too late. And consequently, there has been an increase in the female Black students in medical school, but not the males. So that, you know, it's not as, I guess, as exciting as, you know, MBA or basketball and so on. But, you know, people need to think they can be a doctor.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
by consequently doing it, getting them interested, see, because the interesting thing is, 41% of doctors are white.
Yeah, we did some statistics on that, I think, on one of our shows.
Right. And 22% are Asian. Actually, the Harris County Medical Directory, Smith is the second most common name. Nguyen is the most common name, Vietnamese. 22% of Asians are physicians. Only 5% are Black. So,
And what about Latinos? What about the Latinos?
Latinos, they're about the same, 5%.
5%, yeah.
But these programs, we need programs like that to get in the high schools, to get more Black doctors, more Hispanic doctors, But you have to start early.
You have to get them, like Dr. Crum says, you have to get them that young and get them interested and get them exposed to something that is outside their scope. So they can want to go to medical school or even just want to go to college.
Yeah.
Or to see that it's achievable, that there is a plan and a path for it to happen.
And there's people out there that care about them and want them to do better.
But I would wager to think it's going to have to start long before they get to high school, because in high school, you know what I'm trying to say? I see what you're saying, Dr. Crum, but they need to go back all the way to elementary. Mm-hmm. You know, it's you got to have that, you got a presence.
Because I didn't even know what a doctor did when I did. It just seemed like the right thing to do when I applied to medical school. Yeah.
Well, you've been helping people a long time. Many minority communities are described as food deserts. It is unfortunate that upbringing, education, and culture in our society has led to ingrained prejudices and biases, of which we are often unaware. And for most folk, we don't understand or realize that we need to have these conversations about race and healthcare inequality. And I am so happy that you joined us today, Dr. Crum. So we're going to get our final thoughts from our panelists.
Okay. Let me say one thing about that issue, because I watched one of the documentaries, and with the not disparaging anyone, the Black Lives Matter, the riots, et cetera, and the one grocery store in an area of Chicago, once they destroyed it, the company wouldn't rebuild it. So everyone had to go across town to get their groceries. So we need to be, I don't know how you can do that, but we need to get to where they can stay in the communities, where the stores will stay in the communities for the people.
But Dr. Crum, that happens a lot I've noticed. And basically what you're doing there is you're destroying your own house.
Right.
Okay. There are a lot of communities. I think we had a segment on that, ladies, didn't we? For stores, grocery stores. Major food chains and stuff, they're not in communities of color. It's going to require a lot more, a conversation longer than ours, because this stuff is so deeply in, it's a maze, it's a mess. Yeah. But I think we've started the conversation. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, BJ, what are your final thoughts?
All right. Well, Dr. Crum, you've given us a lot to think about, and we are, again, grateful for your knowledge. It's very clear that you've been an advocate for your patients, for all of your patients. So part of my final thought is, if it's true that the poor we will have with us always, it's also true that we will need to always work to make it better. And based on some of your comments, Dr. Crum, that's everyone needs to work. Even those who identify as poor will need to work. And I do want to say this to our audience. While we were away, we did work to identify those topics and issues that we thought would be important to our viewers. We thank those of you who took the time to make comments and spread the word about our program. We have and are continuing to add new features to our website. So please visit us at Kicking It With Kidneys. That's kickingitwithkidneys.com. And we want to also encourage you guys to continue to support us by clicking the like button and subscribing. And after our program today, we're sure you're going to have a lot of comments. So please continue to share those comments. Tell us what you think and tell us about any topics that you'd like to hear about in the future.
All right. All right, Rita, what say you?
I say you can't go back and change the beginning, like Dr. Crum said, but you can start where you're at and change our endings.
Correct.
Yeah, that's good. Maria.
I would just like to say to Dr. Crum, I've admired your contributions to the medical profession. I have personally seen Dr. Crum do some outlandish things to make sure that the patients were treated well. So again, Dr. Crum, thank you for all your knowledge, your spirit, and everything that you do for the medical community. We really appreciate that. And your audacity to join us today with this topic, talking to us in a community. Yes. So we really appreciate that.
Part of my history, I joined the paratroopers. I was a sergeant in the paratroopers when I was 19 years old before I started college. So I don't have much about fear.
I like that. So why don't you give us your final thoughts, Dr. Crum?
Well, I think that this is a good start. Mm-hmm. We need more and more of it. But the main thing is looking at the high school principals. I was very impressed that why can't we do that in Houston? You know, Houston system has some issues. We need better teachers. So the teachers for all the students. And I think it can be done, but we need to be involved.
Education is key. Yeah. Well, we hope you have enjoyed the show, and we look forward to you joining us on our next episode of Kicking It with Kidneys. Don't forget, join us on Instagram. Is it Facebook, y'all? YouTube? And go to our website, kickingitwithkidneys.com. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
Well, that's it for today. Thank you for listening to Kicking It with Kidneys with your host, Cindy Barclay. See you next week.
The views expressed on this podcast are educational and opinion-based. These are not medical doctors.
Be sure to catch us on social media on our website, kickingitwithkidneys.com, also on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube.